Yeah, and I'm glad you called that out. It is a very important training for us. And actually all of the new school committee members, everyone gets that one training before the first meeting. But then there's also another training that they're required to take between 6 and 8 hours of classroom education in their first year.
Sherlock here for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, available anywhere, anytime, on the internet, in your browser, WFPR.FM, and in the local Franklin Mass FM radio dial. Yeah, the dial or the push buttons, 102.9 is the number. Here today for a chalkboard chat. Yeah, there was a school committee meeting on Tuesday, and after the election, this was the first school committee, so they had to do a reorganization, and we have a new chair. Chair Paul Griffith, thank you for doing this and congratulations on being chair.
Thank you so much, Steve. And really thanks to the committee. It really means a lot that I think we're all able to come together around this reorganization behind Dave and myself, just kind of this everyone supporting the two of us. And we really look forward to being able to support the school committee as a whole, and really kind of push forward with our goal to make sure the schools are in as good a position as possible this year, and continue seeing what kind of successes we can see out of our students over the course of the next year.
Definitely, because we've had a bunch of successes,
We have.
particularly as was highlighted even with a new press release. But I know you've got some stats in regards to some of the sports successes.
Yes. No, we've had some really great ones. And actually, Lucas was able to update us this past week, which was great. We had girls soccer going to the first state championship since 2012. That's really exciting. Looking to see how that ends this weekend. Volleyball, D1 state champs, first time ever. A really, really big deal there. I was thrilled to hear about this. And apparently, from what Ruth Ann was saying, anyone remotely close to the high school that night knew that something big was happening, everyone coming home and celebrating. So I was really
The
excited to hear about
police
that.
and fire escort coming back in
Yep.
off the highway. Yep, that's a
As
kind of a tradition
well
that
deserved.
works.
Yes. No, it was fantastic to hear. And then we had our field hockey team making it to the finals for the first time ever, for the state finals. I know it was a really, really, hard fought game and didn't quite, shake out the way we had hoped. But again, coming in right at the end there and making it that far, I think is a huge deal. And calling that out, I think
Well,
was
and
great.
credit to the competition as well, because Walpole's been there multiple years and has won multiple times, and they gave him a heck of a game.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. And that's it. We're, having it, really come down, and it's a close, very hard fought game. I think really, really means a lot.
Yes.
And then I know that we do have also our cheer squad is also competing for state again. Again, this is really, I think it's very, very impressive to see just how powerful all of our women's sports have been this fall alone. And I'm really just kind of excited to call that out and looking forward to the continued successes and seeing these teams can continue to build over the upcoming years.
Yes. And then after the organizational session, you get into the pledge, which from I think it was the fourth grade group uniquely had what one of each of the students had been to one of the each of the elementary schools before.
Yeah, I was thoroughly impressed that we're really were able to have that kind of cross section of our town. So to your point, we had five students from the Washington Street 3 to 5, all from the same class that happened to be from all five of the prior elementary schools, really kind of showing this mixing that we have across the entire town. And really, I think showing that these students are thriving in this new environment. They're really enjoying it. They're already, really embodying what we're hoping for, as students in our schools. So I was really, really thrilled to see that. And they were ready to go. They were, it's always fun seeing the students get up there and just, they know the mission. They get up there, they have everything ready to go. Especially at the beginning of, the term like this, I know there's a lot more things kind of going on for a few minutes instead of just great. You walk in, chair says hi, you do the pledge, and you're ready to go. Watching everything kind of unfold in front of you, and that anxiety possibly of getting ready to get up and lead the pledge ahead of time. And they did a great job. But I was really, really thrilled to see that cross section of the town all in one classroom coming in.
Yeah, it's always good to see the students doing that. And then as you have opportunities, and I'm sure we'll see them more during the year when they come in and make presentations on whether it's social studies or something along, it's fascinating to see them in action. So that's good. I mean, it's always good to have the teachers and the staff and the central office people telling what's going on in the schools, but then to see the students do it, yeah, that's
It's special. I think it really is that reminder of why we all, volunteer as we do, is to make sure that, we're able to really kind of see the fruits of society's labor here, where we have these students who are able to really excel at what they're doing, and be able to really kind of take these very public steps to demonstrate what our, fantastic teachers and educators have been able to provide them over the course of the year. So yeah, I definitely look forward to some of those opportunities later this year.
Because we certainly will have some challenges, and we've had some challenges, but despite the challenges, the quality of the education still has been top notch.
Yeah, and I think, that's always, it can be hard to kind of reconcile. I know we've had a lot of big challenges, especially when it comes to the budget. We've had some big cuts. The reorg was, I know, a very big kind of shakeup for a lot of folks. And it's been something that I think there will be some anxiety for a while yet. But remembering that, we still have these truly amazing teachers. That are, all throughout the school system doing some fantastic things. We have folks who have been around for a long time. We have a great, great cohort of teachers that have been in this district for a shorter period of time, but have already made really, really big impacts. And I know that we also have, just kind of this great community around the schools where we have some teachers who are willing to really kind of go above and beyond and really, engaging with the students in other ways. Like some of our coaches, I know, we just, brought a coach in, Coach M with basketball, where he had been coaching outside of the district for a while and was so excited to come back. And I think that really it speaks a lot to the community that we have and really how much the teachers care about the students that we have here. And that is really, I think, as long as we're able to continue to keep that going through all the challenges that we're going to face, through all the things that we hear, and all the kind of ups and downs along the way, we're going to continue to have that amazing education that we've all come to, really count on, and our students and kids really, really benefit from.
Yeah, and I think one of the other aspects, and we kind of teased to, we're expecting a lot, and the proof will be in the pudding as we go, but kind of bringing, especially through the reorganization, which was hard, but now you're bringing people of a grade of some experience and some new experience, bringing together them together from different schools into their new locations, whether it's a Washington K-2-3-5, Lincoln K-2-3-5 middle school, three of them coming together now in one place. And then seeing the collaborations, the coordinations, and the synergies just happening there, that I think is going to be exciting to watch as well, because I'm hopeful for a lot of great benefits from that.
Yeah, and I think, we've definitely seen, I know with my kids, doing different activities in town, whether it's music, whether it's sports, them walking into the classroom and seeing kids that they play, it's like great, they see them in the fall or they see them in the spring or they see them, at karate, to be able to see them all in class when they couldn't, they were it was, they had their couple of friends that they knew in their school. And then now, as everything has kind of, gotten mixed together, they see all these kids around a lot more. I think they've really enjoyed it. I know that they've also enjoyed some of the different kind of rivalries that have popped up already. Apparently, is already kind of a natural rivalry between Washington and Lincoln. Picked my daughter up from Spanish earlier today, and she walked out and be like, "Oh yeah, this one friend of mine, he goes to Washington. I go to Lincoln. Both in the same grade. We just talk about which school's better." And I was like, that's. For I really enjoy it because it's it is this reminder of we're all the same community. And if it's these little differences, at elementary school where you kind of you're both really, really proud of your school. And then, as soon as you kind of come together in the middle school, it all locks in where it's like, great, we're that one community all over again.
Right.
I think it really it sets us up for some very engaging and very just wholesome, I think, opportunities for our kids to see, to kind of see what the whole town offers and be able to interact with each other a lot more.
Right. And that gives us something of a segue that we can make because one of your first legislative actions was actually approving the policy that now takes the place since MCAS as a graduation requirement got taken away, leaving the whole so you as a local district not only had to do the graduation requirements, but then determine competency requirements.
Yes, we did have a second reading for two different policies. Both kind of the they marry together pretty well. It is essentially surrounding basic graduation requirements and then our language for what is specifically going to be required, like coursework. To your point, MCAS is no longer a an establishment for graduation. Like it used to be just kind of great.
Right. It
You're all
still
set to
sticks
go.
around. It's still here. It's just not a
It's still a
grad requirement.
requirement. It's just not a graduation, graduation requirement. But we did have, essentially it comes down to just, four primary courses. In another year, we're going to have another round of courses with U.S. history coming in for 2027. But, I think what it does, what it really did is it gives our students a very clear understanding of what they're going to need to do, getting a 60%. In these four classes, and really kind of enumerating it where people see, great, this is exactly what is expected of us according to the district. We did do this in conjunction with DESE. We're not completely creating something brand new here, which I think is good. It does allow for some consistency. But to your point, getting all this together, administering it, and then if there are any challenges that we run into, if students challenge the, the requirements or their fulfillment of them, it is something that we now have to take on entirely. The state used to be able to handle all that,
And
but now
clearly, at
it comes
a
down to
state
us.
level, they had some leverage and they had some efficiencies managing one process across however many 300 something communities and school systems. But now you effectively, along with every other, have to create some sort of appeal process.
We have to create it, which I think the work that goes into those kind of processes behind the scenes and making sure that you have a fair system and making sure that it's very consistent, well understood. There's a lot of time involved there, but then also staffing that appeal
True. Yeah.
process. I
Who's
think
going to
people
do
don't.
that? Yeah.
Yes, and that I think is definitely underappreciated. We have a lot of things that come along like this where. Yes, fine. Locally we have, we might have some more control over things, but somebody then has to do it. We don't have the resources to bring in someone new to do it. So really it just becomes, another task for our administration, another task for our educators or other support staff. So I think it's, in one level, it's great that we're able to provide this additional clarity. And I know that it was a really big, big movement with the vote. At the state level. So I know people were really excited about that outcome. But now, kind of the financial pressures and the time pressures on us locally are going to be something we have to monitor. And we'll definitely make sure that we continue updating the community on that front so they understand everything comes at a cost, one way or another.
Right. Pay me now or pay me later.
Yes.
Yes. And then moving to the discussion only items, you've got, since we're coming into winter and it certainly has been rather cold, an update on the inclement weather notice.
And you could tell Lucas is a little anxious. I know we've had a couple of really, really mild winters, and he's kind of waiting for the one that's not. as I think was the general sentiment at the meeting, all of us are very happy that we don't have to be the ones calling that. Whether it's a day, a day off, a delay, or anything like that. I think that is the one thing that Lucas probably will never be able to delegate because no one is going to accept that responsibility. But yeah, so getting the update from that front, just making sure that people understand there's a lot of information that goes into any decisions around inclement weather. Forecasting is one thing. Locally, I think this is something that people always miss out on a little bit. You see, hey, this Eastern Mass is going to get a foot of snow.
Right.
Great. But in that there's going to be pockets where we might be getting 6 inches, we might be getting a foot and a half.
Sure.
Our roads might be well below freezing throughout the entire day, which is going to make salting a lot more challenging. It's going to make the conditions a lot slicker, more dangerous. So I think that was one of the big things that Lucas did a good job of kind of highlighting where, yes, we watch the news too. We watch all the different channels. You really get a decent sense of kind of what's going on. But there is a very local component where we're working with the DPW to make sure that we understand exactly where they stand on things, what any kind of risks are there. And they've done a fantastic job partnering with us to make sure that, you know, they really try to dig out the schools very quickly. I know that, you know, sometimes there's frustration around like, great, my road might not be quite as clear as I'd love. But we really do a great, you know, they really do a great job of making sure that our students are going to be safe and our students can get into the schools as quickly as possible in a safe manner.
Sure.
And then, you know, I think again, and I'd called it out again during the meeting, you know, we do have some great policies around this inclement weather where if ever it's going to be really, really cold outside, if the weather is bad, if we have any kind of delay, our buses are instructed to pick up any and all students they run into along the way. So if they're driving down even one of the bigger roads, not near any of the bus stops, and your you know child is walking to school, you might normally be a walker, they're going to offer to pick that student up, make sure they get into school safely, not worried about, you know, any of the kind of slick conditions or again the cold.
Right.
That's something I just want to remind parents of as well, where, you know, timing it might be one thing. You know, when the bus goes by every day, if you're going to walk to school like on those days, yeah, maybe 2 minutes earlier, if you know you're going to be out there in time for the bus. But definitely, you know, feel free to kind of flag them down and look to get a ride, just to get everyone there and, you know, in good shape.
Yeah, I think the two pieces I'd reinforce is certainly Lucas, while he's the final call, he spends an awful lot of time, and he alluded that in terms of DPW, but also police and fire, because they're generally on the road, so they can give them the real-time condition status, et cetera. So it's truly a collaboration piece on that front. And then the other piece, I think either another committee member or Lucas mentioned as well, if not you, it's still a parental decision. So even if this decision is made to continue, and the parent still has the choice, and that's going to be up to them to either go or not go, et cetera. Clearly let the school know what the status is, so the tracking, et cetera, happens. But yeah, it's still a parent choice.
That was something I mentioned where, you know, we make sure that we make a judgment call for, you know, the 4,000 some students that we have as a whole and the, you know, 1,000 staff that we have. But especially on those days, you know, the really rough days or when we have a lot of, you know, weather, winter weather kind of in the area, everyone's going to be impacted a little bit differently. Definitely make the best judgment call. Just let us know, you know, if you're not able to get out of the driveway, great. Like we, you know, we definitely have policy around it and our understanding. Just give us a call and give us a heads up so that we know that everyone's safe. But yeah, definitely make that call based on what you're seeing between your, you know, your door and ours. We can't go down every single street, but we do our best to gather as much information as possible.
Right. And then moving along, I think it was wise for especially the newer members of the committee, since you had already seen from the prior committee work and approved the district and thereby the superintendent's goals, to at least kind of have that level set. Granted, it was a little bit shorter type discussion, but it was a good broad overview of some of the key structures for the superintendent and the assistant superintendent from the district's approach as to, oh, by the way, now that you're here and focused on the students, this is the general plan of the education, teaching approach, special ed approach, business approach, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, there were really, I think, a couple of key call outs during, you know, the goal discussion. You know, first off, that flip book, if anyone hasn't looked through it, that is an amazing resource. Very, very easy to kind of analyze everything. The way it's laid out is very simple. I personally like it because trying to create that same sense of like, all right, four goals in one view on a piece of paper. Either you have like 2-point font, or it doesn't flow quite as well.
Right.
So the way it looks is great. But yeah, we have everything. We have goals for every single level, every one of the school levels. We have our business side. We have, you know, we have HR. We have operations. We have the superintendent's office. really seeing it all enumerated, where I know that it can be a bit of a black box people feel, especially during evaluation of like, all right, well, what did you actually do? And to be able to kind of look at it all, I think ahead of time and say, there's a thousand things on our plate at all times, and really kind of see how we're going to be measuring things was great. And then also, it was actually something that I had flagged with the superintendent a couple months back, where his goals, I think, are always, they're great, they're well worded. The problem is it can be hard for someone, especially if they're just tuning in kind of at the end, like when we're just talking about his evaluation, to really see what all it is that he does and how we're stacking it up, how we're actually measuring it. So his goals, he did update, he didn't update the language of the goals themselves, but he provided us with very discrete measurements for each one of those goals. So
Metrics where possible, things of that sort.
yeah, and where possible, like that, when he first said that, I was like, all right, we'll have a couple of hard numbers in there. And when you look at it, every single line item, he's like, all right, greater than 90% here, 100% here, 100% here. Like he really went through and collected all the goals of the district and took them on as his own and kind of assigned them to the different priorities that he's been given by the school committee, in conjunction with his own recommendations. So I thought that was really good, and that's gonna be really helpful for us, next year when we are doing that evaluation, not just in saying, great, what is it that we're measuring, but also being able to, really talk to the community and say, this is exactly what he did from a numerical perspective. It's not just a kind of a hand wave of, we think he did excellent. And then as soon as someone's like, well, what does that mean? You're kind of like, well, like he went above and beyond. Like we know what the goals are. We went through each and every one, and we have the evidence for each one. We can actually sit there and point to different values and say, yes, he went above and beyond. This was his target. He exceeded that. He all these other goals he was able to hit and achieve. And I think that would be something very meaningful to not just us as the evaluators, but also the community as key stakeholders in that process.
Having been in the corporate world where that kind of evaluation piece, how do you measure success, is always an interesting conversation. And he certainly seems to have spent some time in developing appropriate from his point of view. And then you'll be able to view and see, and oh, yeah, that was really good because this is what he did and this is how he did it. So you'll be able to monitor that accordingly. So, yep, definitely.
Absolutely.
And then the
And then,
last of the three discussion-only items was also informative for the newbies as well in regards to the collaborative operation via the Accept quarterly update. And as Lucas mentioned, we're part of two collaboratives, the BICO and Accept, which I think in one of the early December meetings, I think Paula Morano mentioned she's up to provide more detail on special ed. And I'll also put a teaser in because I think it was mentioned in the meeting. She and I did sit for an audio. So to get into some of the kind of behind the details as to what special ed entails and student services that she runs. So we can tease that. That's coming shortly to your podcast feed.
Yeah, and I think that will be very interesting to see. And she's really a fantastic person to talk to for that overall, all the needs and kind of what goes into that system. But yeah, to your point, we did hear more about Accept and BICO. And I think the real key takeaways there are that these are two different collaboratives that we're in. We're the only school that's in both of these specific collaboratives. It's, plenty of schools are in different collaboratives for different purposes, but we really have taken, I think, a very proactive approach here. We have leadership roles in both of them. But very quickly, what they are is essentially we contribute, there is a financial contribution to it, where then we work with a bunch of different schools in the area to create proper educational facilities or supports for students that need something that's a little bit different than what we're readily able to provide in our school system. As Lucas pointed out, we have actually hosted this in our school system before. I believe it was for BICO that we did house in the middle school over at Annie Sullivan. But with the reorg, we've had to change things up a bit. It's something we can definitely explore in the future. But really here, I think the big advantage, and from a financial perspective, and of course, I think for education, it's always very, very important to focus on the outcome for the students. But as a town, finances are always going to be a concern. This is a way that we're able to actually save significant amounts of money
Sure.
on mandated provisions for some of our students. So we are required to make sure that our students are really set up for success, and that they're able to achieve, everything that they're capable of, and provide the proper settings for them. In these situations where we can't necessarily provide it in-house, we would be, we are mandated to be able to send students to the correct locations to make sure that they're getting everything that they need. And with these two collaboratives, we work with other schools to basically help manage those costs. And as was highlighted at the meeting, we do actually get a significant discount on those overall costs because we're a part of these collaboratives. So other schools that are not part of it, they still utilize them, but they're paying full bill. So for us, it really is a good long-term approach. And I think just a very important part of, kind of that broader community where it's not just, Franklin does not sit by itself. We are not in isolation in, Massachusetts. So it really allows us to be, I think, important leaders and supporters of the broader educational community here in Mass. So both of those are great. Again, I know you're going to be hearing more from Paula about BICO. But yeah, it was, I think, very clever from Lucas's perspective. It was a one pager, basically just saying, hey, everything's moving along as expected. Accept is doing well. And then was really able to launch into this kind of quick and very helpful educational session for the new, the new school committee members, but then also the community that might, some of them might be tuning in for kind of the first time in a while. So I thought it was really helpful to get all that laid out.
I think that'll be a good segue deliberately into between the podcast episode and then her presentation, so that people should be able to have a better understanding of how we deal with the special ed students, which certainly have special requirements, can be very costly. But with our in-house versus out-of-district placements, we're able for those in-house students to save significantly and continue to evaluate as to what other programs we might be able to bring in-house through work with the various collaboratives. And again, still depending upon what students we have and what their needs are. Because that's the bottom line that we need to deliver for and meet those needs, whether in-house or out of district. By law, that's what we got to do.
Yeah, and I think, and this is something that also Paul and I have both spoken about publicly multiple times. I think there's another layer to it that we can miss sometimes when we're talking about, these requirements. And it is, I think it's very important from the financial perspective to understand that those requirements do exist. But I think especially as educators and as those who support the educational system, the moral imperative here to make sure that we're providing all of our students with what best sets them up for success in life, really can't be understated. I know Paula, the decisions that she makes are really with these students in mind. She's not trying to say, great, this is what I have to do. The state told me I have to do this. She's really trying to make sure that we're doing what we can to try and help people along into the best scenarios for themselves.
Yeah. Definitely. And one of the pieces that'll be in, I'm sure, in her presentation, so we certainly discussed it. Somebody within special ed and an IEP, an individual education plan, they don't necessarily stay there forever. There are many who are in there for maybe a year or two, and then depending upon the success of the mitigations, the remediations, the accommodations, then the student is off on their own back into, quote, the normal world. And, our costs are adjusted accordingly. But the better piece is the student is prepared to do what they need to do.
Yes, and that I think, there's definitely some hesitancy sometimes from people, on looking at 504s or IEPs because they're concerned about kind of what it might mean in the end. And I think there's been some really fantastic opportunities for parents to get educated on that, on that process. And especially when you have, some of the great educators that we have here who really have the students, best interests at heart. It's something that I've spoken to people about where when you know and you trust the people in the classroom with your children, because you've seen the work that they do and you see how willing, you know, how willing they are to really go above and beyond. It's a great opportunity to utilize those two systems of the 504 and the IEP to really codify that, where it is now, to your point, you know, students are, they continue on their regular day. You know, they're able to just kind of, you know, they don't know any different. They're none the wiser, and I think that's a fantastic aspect of it. But if there's little nuances that help make sure that they succeed, we've now made sure that everyone, you know, all the educators in the system understands that it's our responsibility to make sure that we're providing that, where it then becomes as essentially the goal is as seamless as possible. Where again, the students, they don't necessarily know kind of the ins and outs. They're just like, oh great, you know, I can stand kind of towards the back, or if I need to get up and walk around the classroom, it's okay. Little nuances like that, I think parents don't always recognize just how impactful that can be on the student. But through these systems and really kind of with the guidance and the leadership that we have, and make sure that even those little steps are accounted for, and that the students are really cared for in what they need most.
They're our future, so we need to develop them appropriately for sure.
Absolutely.
Well, I think that covers the highlights of the session that was. And you know, if I recall, you've got one more session in December before the calendar year closes, but then you still got plenty more sessions in the new year.
Yeah. You know, the only other thing that we really talked about was actually looking at the subcommittees and liaisons. Just kind of giving people an idea as to what all goes on there. And I think it's something that I, you know, I can say as a new school committee member, you know, in the last term, you know about them, but you don't really know kind of what all goes into it. And I think the importance of, you know, of these different subcommittees. So I really appreciated the time that, you know, Lucas took to kind of update everyone and let them know, you know, with the subcommittees, these are essentially guidance forming bodies. So like for policy, if we have policies come before us, they start in the policy subcommittee. It's three members. So it's never basically a quorum of the overall committee. So for a school committee, that means, you know, any of the subcommittees are just three members. We have budget, which anyone who tuned in for the budget discussions last year saw a lot of the budget subcommittee, because all the joint budget subcommittee meetings were schools, town, and FinCom. But then we have, you know, a bunch of others that are also very, very impactful and kind of smaller stints. So like superintendent evaluation is one where when it comes up, having been on that last year, that is a few very, very long meetings. But outside of, you know, basically 2 months or so, it's a pretty quiet subcommittee. So I think that was really helpful. And then, you know, I wanted to call out you know, all the different committee members. Folks got back with their interest essentially in 24 hours.
Oh,
So
cool.
we're able
Good.
to really kind of look at where things are fitting, where people are really interested, and start placing things out. The goal is to have that out to folks before the next meeting, so that if they're interested in it, they can, you know, set up a meeting ahead of time, start kind of moving through some of the different responsibilities that we have. Because to your point, we only have one meeting left and then end of year, and we come back in January and we're right into the budget. You know, kind of diving headlong into the really intense window, and lots of things coming up in the new year.
Yeah, and then I realized too that you actually had a workshop before your formal session on, well, from MASC in the person of Tracy Novak, who's our field director, if I got her title properly. Representing Franklin, so she's our key guide. But she effectively went through kind of the rules and regulations, the do's and the don'ts, akin to what Jamie and Attorney Sorrell did for the town council side. So you got that in your own separate session, not as part of the meeting, but as part of the workshop. But oh, by the way, through the technology, Franklin Radio was able to put that out. So that's one of the benefits I try to bring in, is to focus on some of those workshops and subcommittees that are not necessarily available for replay. Because I think that's, especially that, knowing you need to know how you're going to operate, but we as the community need to know, well, that's either in your realm or it's not. And the process of escalation, of course, was mentioned in that, et cetera. So there's lots of good info that the audio is available. It's only an hour. People can spend time to better understand what now you need to do and how you're going to do what you're going to do for us.
Yeah, and I'm glad you called that out. It is a very important training for us. And actually all of the new school committee members, everyone gets that one training before the first meeting. But then there's also another training that they're required to take between 6 and 8 hours of classroom education in their first year. So that, again, it's MASC is really, really helpful. It's the Association of School Committees. We've had Tracy Novak before, come and talk to us. She's very, very well informed. She's, very involved, not just in, supporting the school committees, but also really education as a whole in Massachusetts. And I think just the wealth of knowledge from her own experience on the school committee, from all of her time with MASC is very, very helpful, because I think she does it, kind of splitting the difference, where she highlights the important parts, but she doesn't belabor them. She doesn't sit there and tell you everything that you could possibly do wrong. She's like, great, here's all the key issues. Here's the guidelines that if you use these guidelines kind of across the board, you'll always be in good shape. And then at the same time, she's like, by the way, here's our card. Anytime you have a question, call us. And they are extremely receptive, very, very helpful in providing guidance, and helping, I know a lot of the different school committees and individual members, just to make sure that we're doing things right. And I think that is really, it's the crux of it, right? Is we want to make sure that we're doing the best we can for the students, but then also within the legal realm that we're held accountable appropriately, and that we always make sure that we're doing things the right way. So,
It's somewhat a dynamic environment anyway, but you might as well understand some of those dynamics so you can do what you need to do.
Yes, and it's very helpful to have their guidance on that. They're very communicative. Anytime there is a big change where something comes down from either the state or the federal level, we do get communication from MASC saying, heads up, here's where things are, here's what, basically kind of breaking it down. It's like, all right, here's 10 pages of what just happened. Here's the one paragraph that just tells you like what really is the impact here, and how, how's a good approach to kind of move forward, understanding things as best you can. So very, very helpful. I know it's a bit of a hike out here for her to come and do this, and actually a lot of credit to Dave Callahan. He set this up over the summer. Apparently called up MASC over the summer and was like, hey, we have an election. This is our first meeting afterwards. Can you come and talk, and kind of introduce everyone? And we're the first one on the calendar for the year. So
Yay.
a lot of credit to Dave,
Yay.
in really keeping things organized that way. So
Well, it fits with the town
one way or another, we pull it
tagline,
off. It's always impressive.
Well, thank you for taking time to recap what happened and kind of tease what's coming because, yeah, you got a lot of work ahead of you, and we're here to help spread the word as to what is happening and keep it straight. And then clearly, we'll include in the show notes the contact info, which I believe has already been updated on the school's page, so that people will be able to reach out and say, hey, what's going on with this, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes, and we really appreciate your efforts to continue to message out and make sure the people in town are informed. I know it's, I feel like it's always kind of the unsung moment where you spend a lot of time telling us and thanking us for our time, but it's always a two-way street. We wouldn't be here and having the opportunity to communicate more with the town without you, continuously engaging and reaching out and being there at all these meetings. It really means a lot, for us to have this kind of communication in the town, this really, I think, just informative way, that you do things. So thank you, Steve, for all those efforts, and looking forward to continuing these conversations over the course of the next 2 years.
Yes, well, thank you very much. And to the listeners, thank you for listening. If you've got any questions, certainly, the contact info will be in there as we mentioned. And stay tuned, there'll be more of these coming. And a final reminder, we do this because Franklin matters.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tintype Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.